And it is great to welcome off the top of the show, John Massaro, the principal of Arrowfield Stud. John, congratulations yesterday. Another unbelievable day for Arrowfield.
No, a great day, I must say, and beyond our expectations, even.
$2.5 million Schnitzel and Rising Romance, we knew was a great racehorse. But again, it just continues the remarkable story line that is Redoute's Choice.
Yeah, well, Dane Hill, Redoute's Choice, now Schnitzel.
Yeah.
It's, I think we might be the only farm in history anywhere that's had three consecutive father-son champions in one jurisdiction. So it's exciting, and it's a wonderful opportunity for us, and we're privileged to be involved in it, frankly.
Congratulations yesterday, John. But when you have a look at this clearance rate, it's 85%. But I was talking to you off air, the clearance rate for Arrowfield is something I don't think that your farm's achieved ever in the last 12 months.
Never seen anything like this, Gareth. We have sold, I think, 50-odd horses at the Magic Millions, all gone. I think 20 or 30 horses, I can't remember the exact number, so I think it's 20 horses at the Classic, all gone. I think 9 horses in Victoria, the Premier, all gone. We've sold every horse we've offered this year. I've never seen anything like it. The appetite. Okay, we've been reasonable on our pricing, etc., but they nevertheless have all sold, and that we've achieved around budget levels that we expected, and it was a pretty aggressive budget that we set ourselves. And now here we're at Easter. We've passed in 2 yesterday, but we've already got some interest this morning, and I'd say they'll go by lunchtime. Those 2 will have been posted as sales, which means we'll have sold, I don't know, 25 out of 25 yesterday, which is an amazing thing, really.
John, you've had a successful business career. Can you work it all out, or put a finger on why this is happening?
Well, look, I think there are 2 or 3 issues. It's not one single factor. I think there are 2 or 3 issues at play here. Very low interest rates where people can borrow money and it really isn't, the holding charges aren't high. Availability of credit. The fact that the government is pump priming the economy on a continuous basis to keep it going, to maintain a reasonable level of unemployment, not let it blow out. But also, importantly, I think there's a psychological factor. I think with all that negative publicity in the media about, and through the government announcements, etc., about the pandemic, people have felt that they've seen death go by. They've looked at death in the face in the last 12 months, and they've said to themselves, you know what?
Stuff it.
I just want to have a good time.
Yep.
If I like a horse and it costs another $100,000, I'm just going to buy it. I think there's that element now in the marketplace. Every asset class that we're all aware of, if you look at cars, boats, houses, stock market, every asset class is rising. And I think it's a mixture of availability of credit, low interest rates, and the psychological impact of the pandemic.
Day one, gross Southern Hemisphere record, $64 million. The average, $368 million. Is it sustainable, though, John?
Well, Australia has the best economics of racing of any of the democratic nations, racing nations. I mean by democratic, where it's open to come in to racing quite easily, unlike, say, Japan or Hong Kong, where you've got to be licensed for everything. Australia's easy to enter the racing industry. And of all those countries like the USA, the countries of Europe, the other countries of Asia, it's South Africa, all those countries, we offer the best returns to owners. And that's a fact.
Mm.
And prize money hasn't stopped rising because we've got a very good formula here for selling our product through the media, etc., into wagering. And thanks to the administrators over the period, we're in very good shape there. So the fundamentals are strong here,
yep.
And yet our prices are still below USA prices and etc. and other European prices. I was thinking to myself yesterday, a nice filly here, for $1 million you could buy yourself a really nice filly, it's about as good as there is. That's 700 and something thousand US. You wouldn't get the equivalent there at 700,000 US. So we think it's expensive,
yep.
But in world terms, it's not that expensive, yet we have the best economics of racing.
$2.5 million yesterday. What's the most expensive horse you've sold?
I think my previous one was that price.
Yeah.
Quite a few years ago.
So you've been doing this for so long, you've had so many highs, but what's the feeling like in the ring when you've got a horse that is getting to that echelon?
Well, you get very nervous. It's terribly emotional. And I can tell you that I got home last night, sat in my normal armchair, fell asleep out of the... I was just so tired out of the emotion, drained from the emotion of the day. And my wife had to pull me out of that seat and drag me into bed. And the next time I opened my eyes was 4 a.m. this morning. I slept for about 8 hours straight, not knowing where I was or what I was doing. No dinner, no nothing. So that's how tired I was and how emotional the day was. It was very draining.
John, tell us about the people there at Arrowfield. And we talk a lot when we do our live broadcasts. The people behind the scenes, like you can sell a colt for $2.5 million. But I love the fact that the people that work at all the farms love their job.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's stories behind the certain individuals and the relationship they have with these yearlings.
Oh, very much so. It epitomises. I can tell you that relationship with the yearlings or with the horses was best epitomised when Redoute's Choice died.
Mm.
The day, a couple of years ago, the day he died, I got a phone call from my son Paul, who manages the farm, and saying, "Dan, I'm just ringing to get permission to bury him in situ." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "In the stallion area, we can't move him.
Mm.
Everyone's crying. We're not going to be able to move him."
Mm.
He said, "We can't actually go through the motions of picking him up, putting him on a truck, and then riding through the farm to the cemetery. We just can't do it. We haven't got it. It's not in us to do it." And that's the level of connection and emotion that your staff, if they're good people, and they are good people at Arrowfield, I'm very proud of them, have with the horses. They love them, you know.
Is it true his box still remains empty at Arrowfield?
It's true. We can't get ourselves to. Is there another horse that's... deserves to be in there.
Yeah.
We can't move ourselves to put another horse in there for fear that somehow his memory will pass by, and it'll never pass by. But it's kept that box empty for 2 years now.
You can hear the heartbreak when you still talk about that moment 2 years ago. What did Paul say to you, and how did he tell you that story?
Well, he said to me on the phone, and I was away from the farm, and he said to me, "Look, you know, we were expecting him to die. He was on his last legs for a few days." And he said, "The horse has passed away. And, look, the place is in shambles. Everybody's crying. And we can't do anything with him."
Yeah. What was he like as a character? If he was a person, and you went out for a beer with him, John, what would he be like?
He was a good bloke.
Yeah.
As a character, he had no nastiness in him at all. Even though he is a highly courageous horse and dominant horse as a racehorse and even as a stallion, he was the dominant male of the stallion area. Everyone knew, including the other horses,
he was the boss.
Funnily enough, the guy that's taken over that role now is probably the smallest stallion that we've got, Dundeel. He thinks he's the boss now. Well, there you go.
So bloody Kiwis.
That might tell us something about his future. He might be a champion in the making.
It's amazing, though, the characters and they are the big men of town.
Yeah,
and
the big kahuna.
And they have that attitude.
Very much so.
Yeah.
But even though he was dominant and we... actually built a box for him, a massive box for him, which is the one that's empty, because when other horses went past him to serve a mare, Redoute would kick at the back of his box. And the stallion master came to me one day and said, "Look, I'm worried about the big horse. He might harm himself every time one of the other stallions, he resents the fact that they're going past him and serving before him or something, you know? He resents something." He said, "I think we're going to have to move him out of there." And that's when we built this massive box, which stays empty today, for him, just for him, where he was away from the other stallions and didn't see them go past him, you know? That's the sort of dominance he had. And he's had that, of course, on the track. He did the same thing. But he was also very friendly. He had a... He was used to putting his tongue out. If you went anywhere near his mouth, he'd slip out his tongue, and he'd like you to squeeze his tongue a bit. And everybody thought that was the funniest thing of all time, this great champion sire, and out goes the tongue, and you'd give him a squeeze on the tongue. That's the kind of... He was a bit of a joker, but he was a very friendly horse, never bit anybody, never kicked anybody. He was great, and he knew he was great, but he didn't take advantage of it.
Who was closest to him at the farm?
Well, one of the guys that's going to lead him in, to lead the last yearling in today... was close, Adam Shankly, and because he's been there right through the period. But Joe Hickey, I would say, was the closest. And Joe Hickey's a hard man to get a word out of because he's quite a quiet, quite taciturn guy, very nice guy, keeps to himself, but he's at one with his stallions. He's the stallion manager now. He's been for a few years. He was badly hit by the loss of Redoutes, very, very badly hit. And... he doesn't say much, but he actually gave somebody an interview the other day, which is a first for the last 20 years that he's been there. He's another one that's been there for a long time. He actually opened up a little bit about his feelings about the horse. So Redoutes has affected all of us.
Did he say, John?
I didn't hear the... I haven't heard the interview, but I'm told it was very good.
I think it was an article with Joe McKinnon.
That's it. It was an article with Joe McKinnon.
Yeah,
that's it,
and I've read that. He spoke beautifully about the horse, but that he still finds it very difficult, as you said, to talk about Redoutes as well. We're with John Massara, the principal of Arrowfield, and we're going to take a quick break. On the other side of that, we're going to delve a little deeper into how Redoutes came to your farm, the history before that, the Dane Hill bloodline, and how you secured Dane Hill as well. It's a remarkable story. You're listening to a special edition of Racing Pulse, RSN Central Combined, live from Inglis on day two of the sales.
I've been following him all the way through. I'll tell you.
Welcome back to the special edition here of Racing Pulse and RSN Central. What we're going to do is play Redoutes Choice win in the Guineas, and then we'll talk to John about that.
They reach the 200, and Testarossa sprinting very fast has moved up and has gone to the lead over Redoutes Choice. Cassidy had to pull the whip and then pins. It's Testarossa clear, though. Redoutes Choice is coming again. Testarossa has to find Redoutes Dench. He lunges and wins. Redoutes Choice beat Testarossa. A magnificent Guineas in behind them, either Oval Office for third.
It is one of the best Guineas, the 1990 Caulfield Guineas. A great call by Greg Miles. Now, had you already made an approach or penciled him in, or was it that performance that said, I've got to have Redoutes Choice?
It was that performance that finally moved me to come back to Australia. I was in France when that happened, and I'd made a phone call to one of my staff members and said, put the phone on the radio. This is a fair while ago. Put the phone on the radio. I've got to listen to the Guineas. And I heard that call, and I was there with a mate, and I turned around to my mate, and I said, mate, I've got to get home. I just have to have that horse now. But the history of it is more complicated than that. Actually, Santhus Choice, the mother of Redoutes Choice, I was the underbidder on her at the Melbourne sale. And when Lee Friedman, it got knocked down, I think, to Lee Friedman at the time, I went up to Lee. I knew very well. He trained for us. And I said, Lee, who'd you buy that for? He said, oh, you know, the Sri Lankan gentleman here, Yassine. So I said, can you introduce me? I went to him. I said, well done. I love that filly myself. She's beautifully bred. Anyway, good luck to you. She then went on to win a small race and was retired. She wasn't much of a racehorse. Subsequently, when she got retired, Mr. Yassine was in the offices of David Moody, in the days when David was quite a strong, a big owner and had a training set up too. And he said, look, David rang me and said, look, you've got Dane Hill down there. I've got Mr. Yassine, the owner of Santhus Choice, and I've recommended he should go to Dane Hill because I think that might be the best stallion around. Would you let her? It was a bit late. Would you let her in? I said, no, I'll definitely let that one in because I know the filly well, and she's beautifully bred and everything else. So I had a second contact. Once meeting him first when he bought the mother, second when he booked in the mare. And so I had a feeling of being involved with that, you know, that colt one way or another. And when he ran the first time, a week before, in a listed race, 1 week before the Blue Diamond, and won brilliantly, I thought, my God, this is going to be a very, very good horse. I'm going to ring the trainer up and make sure he doesn't back it up next week because, you know, it'll probably destroy this animal if he backs it up 1 week after.
Recall Lacey, how did that conversation go?
don't worry about it, son. So who was I to even, suggest it to Rick? But anyway, he backed it up, and, of course, he won brilliantly from an outside barrier. It was sensational.
So was it like a sixth sense in a way? Do you believe in that?
I believe in you can have good fortune, but good fortune has to stem. You've got to put yourself in a position to get the good fortune. Do you know what I mean? So there's a bit of each. So from that moment on, he backed him up. He won again. I thought, my God, this is a monster, from a performance point of view. And I followed him all the way through until that race when I was in Paris, which was the Blue Diamond, which is super impressive by sound. And in those days, you couldn't click in and get the race. And I thought, I've got to get back and secure this horse, even though I already had two Sons of Danehill at home. I had Flying Spur and Dan Zero. People thought, this bloke's gone mad. How can you offer three Sons of Danehill in a roster? It's too tight. You've got to get some diversity. They were right. But can you have too much of a good thing?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
So can you let us into the inner sanctum with the deal that was done? How much did it cost for you to get Redoutes?
Well, I went and negotiated with Mr. Yassin, and I offered him a number slightly below what he wanted. He made it clear that he valued the horse at 10. He wanted to keep half of it. So if I was interested in buying it, I would have to offer $5 million for half. Then I could stand him at start and manage him, because he didn't know much about that side of it. And I thought, God, that's a hell of a price, And there's more racing to go. He said, you can manage him racing too. Just take over. And, if you get beaten a couple of times, it'll take the edge off the marketability in the marketplace. $10 million is a lot of money. It was big, big money in those days. And I offered him a slightly lower price and went back to Sydney. And then I realised, I don't know whether he refused that lower price or whether I realised myself, I thought to myself, look, that's the horse you want. You're mad about that sire line. You secured the father. The father's done it all. Just bloody well buy him for $5 million for half. And so I rang back and I said, look, I'll take $5 million for half. Thank you very much. He said, I've been offered a higher price since then, but I'm going to stick with you.
Have you run the numbers since? What is it, 260,000 roughly a serve for 10 years? Some people say
300.
300.
300 at one stage.
Some people say he might have earned $1 billion.
Yes. Actually, he's earned, I think, over $1 billion.
Really?
Not through service fees. No, nowhere near. He's earned $1 billion if you take into account the prize money his produce have generated, the sale aggregates that his produce have generated, and the service fees. He's produced gross domestic product of between 1 and 2 million.
Billion.
A billion. Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it?
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Is there a turning point when you've got a horse like Redoute's Choice and he's at stud and he has his first lot of mares and then is it his second season, third season? When did you go to Mrs. Massara and say, I think we've got something pretty special here?
Didn't take long.
No.
Second season was devastating for him.
Yeah.
He was great. And he started throwing up Blue Diamond winners and Slipper winners. And I thought, geez, we've got something here.
Yeah.
I had the other two who were pretty good too, Dan Zero and Flying Spur. Flying Spur ended up winning one sire championship. Dan Zero won a two-year-old sire championship. So they were pretty good stallions. But this guy, bang, he was very special.
He's produced so many stars. Who do you think's the best he's produced?
Well, look, I think I've got my hands on the best two. I think Miss Finland's probably the best filly he's ever produced. I don't think anyone would argue about that. And I think the Autumn Sun is probably the best colt he's produced. And I'm lucky to own part of the Autumn Sun in much the same deal as I did with Redoute's Choice, where the owner kept half, and Miss Finland I bought in the sale ring. Yeah.
This is a difficult question, but Danehill or Redoute's Choice, if you're doing your 1 to 5 with the greatest stallions, is Greg Miles calling it a dead heat stride for stride, or is Dane Hill in front by a nose, or did Redoute's grab him?
No, I think one has to be accurate with history, and the stats are there. Dane Hill is maybe the best stallion the world has ever seen, only to be surpassed, if it happens, by Galileo, the current horse, the great horse at the moment. Dane Hill's figures are superlative. We've never had figures like them down here. He came here and he blended beautifully with Star Kingdom blood and anything else that was here. It was a complete outcross. And the theory that Danzig would work down here actually played out. And in those first two or three years, we just bred so many Group 1 winners, Derby winners, Slipper winners. I thought all my Christmases were Group 1s. I really did. But, you know, you need some luck.
Yeah.
But that was the acquisition of Dane Hill was not luck, I have to say. This was a team effort where we sat down and we said, we've got to get into that Northern Dancer line. There was none of it down here at the highest level. We can't afford to buy a son, a Northern Dancer. Maybe we can afford to buy a grandson. Let's analyse every son and see which one blood will suit Australia. And we zeroed it down to two stallions, Nureyev and Danzig. And then we said, righto, they're the two most likely to work down in Australia. They both got speed, they both give speed, etc. They both go on grass, very important. Mm. And we zeroed in on Danzig and said to ourselves, you know, he's a better horse than they even know in Europe and America, because half his produce runs in America and half in Europe. They haven't added up the two and worked out he's something out of the box. And he's got that fantastic speed and they love the grass and they've got bone. Nureyev had less bone, a little bit more temperament. So we made the right choice there, and we did it by analysing everything. Yep. And then we went on and said, let's look at all the 2 and 3 year olds in the world by Danzig and see if we can pinpoint one that will follow. And we pinpointed Dane Hill, even though he's owned by one a very wealthy person. We said, that's the one in Dreamsville. That's the one we'd like to get. We'll wait till he wins his Group 1 race. He had won a Group 3 at that point. He went on to win a Group 1 race, and we pounced. Little Aussie battlers turned up there in England and had a go. So that was it.
Unbelievable. Will you have a tear in your eye today when the last Redoute comes through?
I probably will. I probably will. Just watching Adam take him through. I hope he can get through with it. Adam said, no, don't worry, I'll handle it. So, yeah, it's the end of a bit of an era, certainly for ourselves. And, you know, when we talk about the GDP of Redoutes, as if it's an economic thing, he helped the industry enormously, because we didn't sell every yearling by Redoutes. We sold some, probably more than others, because we stood him and we sent more mares to him. But all the industry benefited from what they got in the sale ring. All the industry benefited from the prize money they got by buying his yearlings. A lot of those benefits that came from Redoutes were shared with all the co-breeders.
I know we're running out of time, but when you look back at what he's been able to achieve, and geez, he's changed some lives.
Oh, very much
so. Not just your lives, but the people who have been involved with Redoutes Choices and his sons. And
very much so. And now, through sons and daughters, there's not a weekend that goes through where it's not one of his sons that's produced the best, the winner of the best race on the day, but rather one of his daughters who's, by another stallion, left the best runner of the day. It's just amazing. It is just amazing. It does continue. As I say to people, he has passed away, but he hasn't left us.
No. The legacy will continue to live on. We could sit here and talk to you for ages, John. You've got a busy day ahead of you, though. You've got to set prices for day number two. Good luck with today, and especially with the last Redoutes going through the ring.
Thanks for telling those stories, John. It was
a pleasure.
Stuff.
It's a pleasure.
John Massara, the principal of Arrowfield. 9 o'clock news. On the other side of that, Matt Stewart's news and plenty more guests from the sales.